This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Into the 7 o'clock hour we go. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you on a Friday. Hope you had a great week. Hope you got a nice weekend lined up.
We had a nice visit with Ross Tucker. You should check that out on the podcast later. Everybody help us keep dominating, not just our station, but the entire group of stations here at Entercom. Payne and Pendergast have by far the most downloaded podcasts.
By far. That's not an exaggeration. We had a company meeting where they put a graph up, a vertical bar chart of podcasts within the cluster. There's not just 610, but all the stations here. And I was sitting kind of in the back of the meeting. It was over at the Texans facility. It was in like their amphitheater where the team meets.
Yep.
It was pretty cool.
It was a team meeting room.
A room that you sat in many, many times as a player.
Yep.
And so they put this graph up on the big screen up there, up on the stage. And where I was sitting, the bottom of the screen was kind of blocked by a few people standing up. Maybe our big boss, Sarah Fraser, presenting up there about the podcast. And they showed the chart. And the one that was number one was gigantic. It was a huge, huge bar that was bigger than the next four put together.
It's like a Mandingo.
It was a Greg Oden-like bar. And so they put... I couldn't see which show that was because my view was being blocked. And I said, wow, that show that's number one looks really successful.
Yeah.
And it was us.
It was us.
Yeah.
We had no clue.
No clue.
So we saw it. It was unveiled. And it was all the stations. It was the music stations and everything. To be fair to the music stations, they don't talk as much as we do. So there's not as much necessary. Nobody wants to download a podcast where people are like, hey, here comes Jessica Simpson. I don't know. So we're going to get more.
Yeah. So download our podcast.
Yeah.
Download our podcast. Yeah. So the Rockets. The Rockets beat the Warriors last night by 30. That was nice to see. They covered the 10.5-point spread very, very easily. You have a good number here on the Rockets, Seth, with this new small ball. They're still the talk of the NBA with this small ball.
This is an ESPN article. This is going into last night. I can't imagine that these numbers are any worse. After last night, I would imagine they're a little bit better. Since the trade, Covington and Tucker have played 205 possessions together. Houston has crushed opponents by 19 points per possession, which ranks in the 100th percentile of all lineups.
Take that. You can't do any better than that.
So when Covington and Tucker have been together.
The 100th
percentile. Right, right. So I know they definitely are not any better after last night.
Right.
Nice job.
Yeah.
Couldn't even get any better last night.
Way to give yourself a score that you can't improve upon.
There's a bunch of others. Now, the one surprise was that when Covington and Tucker are out there, they actually are in the 97th percentile for defensive rating.
Okay.
So the defense is... Look, you got a bunch of good defenders out there that can switch everything. But what people are worried about is the rebounding. And they've actually been better on the rebounding with those lineups than people anticipated, too.
Yeah. I'm surprised they're in the 97th percentile. I'm not surprised that they're good defensively. And that's the thing that's been frustrating about watching people analyze this small ball lineup is going, well, this can't work. This can't be sustained. And they talk about the playoffs and the fact that for some reason, a lot of the analysts, I think some of it, not to sound like, dyed-in-the-wool Houstonian, everybody hates us kind of thing, but I do think there is a general feel of dislike for the Rockets among the national media, the studio host types, to where they look at it, they just don't want it to work for the Rockets or Daryl Morey or James Harden or guys like that. So I think their opinions begin there. And then they need to see a lot of proof before they're going to get on board with it. But the analysis of what it's going to be like in the postseason for the Rockets has been a little bit frustrating because they act like teams are all of a sudden going to get taller in the postseason.
Well, no, or and this is what drives me nuts, TNT has been complaining for a decade that there is no good low post play anymore. Nobody posts up, feed it somebody in the post, ask for the ball. All the crap that they were asking Dwight to do and all of that, they've been complaining that that play doesn't exist anymore. But now all of a sudden, what's going to undo the Rockets is all this low post play and right. guys posting up and whatnot.
Right.
I'm not all that concerned. I mean, now, this is the problem. When you get into the playoffs, there are specific matchups. The Lakers and the Nuggets, obviously, where you worry perhaps about what more dominant big men might be able to do against you. But those guys are still a liability when it comes to trying to get them out on. All of a sudden, they're out on the perimeter guarding Russ Westbrook. There's a balance to it. You know, for every negative that you can point out, there's a positive on the other side. And it's going to be fascinating to watch and see how teams adjust to it over the course of a 7-game series more than anything.
This general assumption that what the Rockets are doing, which is unconventional, the general assumption that it just pushes all the chips to the side of the team that has size is frustrating to me. One, first and foremost, because we've seen a championship-level team make its biggest difference or create its biggest difference against the rest of the league by going small over the last few years. And then, granted, they had Kevin Durant and Steph Curry. I get all that. But the Rockets had pretty good players as well. And that team doesn't exist anymore.
Well, look at though. I mean, yeah, they had all those players. But also, let's remember one of the things that we would say at that time was, yeah, and they got Draymond Green. Okay, yeah, Draymond Green is a really nice piece that fit in well with those guys. And he's a very, very, very good player. But it was a cumulative effect of all those guys doing what they did to where all of a sudden when Charles is claiming that a jump shooting team can't win a championship, they sure did end up winning a lot of championships. So it's an experiment. The frustrating thing for me is that what could happen is maybe the Rockets make it to the Western Conference Finals and lose in the Western Conference Finals, and it's deemed a failure yet again, which I don't know what your standard is at that point where are you all of a sudden going to say that the Rockets are a miserable basketball team because they can't make it to the NBA Finals or they can't win in the Finals? I guess more than anything, that's an indictment of James Harden, I guess, and his whether you want to. People would use it as an indictment against James Harden.
Yeah.
Or now you could argue that this is Russell Westbrook's team for the moment.
Well, it's what'll keep Harden out of the generational conversations.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like that. It's what'll keep, and Westbrook as well. It's what'll keep those guys out of the conversations that you have about guys like LeBron James and Kobe Bryant and Michael Jordan and Larry Bird, Tim Duncan, guys like that. You need a title, maybe multiple titles, to get past the bouncer for that VIP room.
I guess I didn't hear this, but I guess Chuck and Shaq last night were also saying that teams got to stop double-teaming James Harden because I don't know why. I guess because then Harden will score 60 points in it. There's a persistent misbelief here that drives me crazy, and it's been over the last couple of years that when Harden scores more than 40 points, they're not winning games.
Yeah.
It's been really frustrating to see. People, they want to believe that Harden is scoring 40 plus points in this vacuum and he's being selfish.
To the detriment,
not. He's scoring 40 points and they're winning those games when he scores more than 40.
Well, his 32 games last year where he scored 30 or more points.
Yeah.
30 more points in 32 consecutive games. They were 21-11 in those games. And they were missing Chris Paul for big chunks of it. They were missing Clint Capella for big chunks of it. It's crazy to think, boy, that was a year ago. And neither of those guys are on the team anymore. They didn't have Clint Capella or Chris Paul, and now you're like, now they don't have Clint Capella or Chris Paul. And I mean, obviously, they have Westbrook and Covington and guys like that.
Russell Westbrook, without a center on the court, has been the most efficient he's ever been in his career.
Yeah.
Like, when there's not a center on the court, which everybody, that was the big concern coming into the season, is, okay, what's going to happen with the Rockets when they have two non-shooters on the floor?
Yep.
Because all of a sudden, the space in there. Now, you take a center off the floor, and Russ is scoring twice as many points in the paint as he was before.
Yeah.
It's opened everything up for him.
Yeah, you're just creating different easy shots, right? Like, instead of creating easy threes for people, open threes, you're creating drives to the hoop where Russ is wildly efficient.
And I guess you can take this as a plus or a minus or hating or not hating. I'm just kind of excited to go into playoff series where the story doesn't have to be about whether Harden has a good game or not.
Yeah.
Russell is a different guy than than Chris Paul was,
yep.
You know, and especially the way he's playing right now. Now it's just a matter of keeping everybody healthy. Westbrook, you know, I was talking about minutes played per game yesterday when we were talking about Russell. Russ is up there, but as one of our listeners pointed out, he's not playing back to back, so his total minutes aren't great. PJ Tucker is right now, I believe, second in the league in overall minutes played.
Yeah.
So he's the guy that's taking the biggest beating. And he's no spring chicken.
He's no spring chicken. He's playing a lot of minutes, and he's playing against a lot of guys who are much, much bigger than him right now.
Yeah.
You know, he's banging around down there, which he's been doing a lot of that anyways. But that's a point Daryl Morey will make quite a bit, which is don't look at minutes played. Look more at the games played. You know, if a guy's playing, honestly, Seth, if a guy plays 42 minutes instead of 38 minutes, these guys play 4 hours of hoops a day when they go to Fondy or when they go to a gym somewhere. So Dak Prescott is staring down the barrel of a franchise tag. Good barrel to stare down. He's going to get $30 million probably. Emmett Smith was on with Adam Lefko. This looked like it was during the Super Bowl week in Miami, but it's a quote that's getting a lot of run right now because Dak Prescott's getting a lot of run right now. In an ironic quote, I guess some would say, from Emmett Smith saying that maybe Dak should look at taking less money.
Dak has to understand and maybe take another perspective. The perspective may not be all the money that you get. It may be how much of the money you're willing to leave on the table, because the Cowboys is a marketable organization.
And so if you got all that extra money that's
not. So if you are the face of the franchise, would it not, instead of taking 35, would you take 28 and leave some for Amari and pick up the other 35 through endorsements?
It's where Tom Brady's screwed all these quarterbacks.
Well, this is where his logic is flawed, and it's this: he'll get that endorsement money regardless.
Yes,
like if he, it's not like he'll say, "Hey, okay, let's just make the math easy. All right, I could take $30 million now, or I could get $25 million, but then I'll get $5 million in endorsements." Yeah, but if you take the $30 million, you'll also get that $5 million in endorsements. So I think that he brings up a point that I think the valid point is, keep that in mind at least when you're doing negotiations, that the money that you're going to make here as a Cowboys quarterback is more than you're going to, in endorsements, is going to be more than if you were to go off to Indianapolis or something. So keep that in mind. But it's not as simple as a mathematical, like, oh, no big deal, I'll just make that up in endorsements.
Well, and could it be more endorsement money as a successful Cowboys quarterback, right? Could it be $5 million if you're going to make a bunch just by being the Cowboys quarterback and being average, right? Dak already has endorsements. We see him on commercials, Campbell Soup, things like that. But if you're a Super Bowl winning Cowboys quarterback, that brings you to the next level. Okay, well, maybe giving up $5, $6 million in salary is the difference between keeping Amari Cooper, keeping, you know, who are some, Byron Jones on the defensive side of the ball, going and getting another piece offensively or defensively. So I think that Emmett made a point that maybe 30 seconds of audio doesn't do complete justice to.
Yeah.
I think where Emmett's catching some heat for it is like, dude, you held out. you stayed home for 2 weeks.
Dude, and not to mention you set a lot of records and got a lot of rushing titles or did whatever, running behind an incredibly dominant offensive line. Right. But you still held out and got all that extra endorsement money to boot as you were a Dallas Cowboy. Yeah. So I always get nervous about any player, current or former, talking about, if I were talking about my own, of course, I'm in the media. The problem is Emmett in the media? I'm talking about now. Not.
No, I don't think he is now. I don't think he is now. Yeah. It didn't go great for Emmett at ESPN.
No, he had a rough time.
He had a rough time
describing things with his mouth.
He created some YouTube moments for all of us, but it didn't end very well.
I do think that I honestly, this might end up being good for the league this year, where all of a sudden I think we might have started to reach a homeostasis of some sort when it comes to the overvaluation of quarterbacks or the, because quarterbacks have been so vital and you're so screwed without a good one for so long, and they were in such high demand, that all of a sudden it feels like there's a glut of quarterbacks.
Yes.
And for a long time it was as simple as, oh wow, you're capable of being a starting quarterback. Here you go. You're going to get a league leading deal. You're going to get $20, $25, $30 million to be a quarterback.
Seth, imagine, okay, this is where Texan fans, I think, can relate a little bit. It's nice that we don't have to relate right now because Texans have Deshaun Watson. Deshaun's going to get a big deal. Deshaun's going to be one of the best quarterbacks in the league, we hope, for the next 10 or 12 years. And the Texans are set. They don't have to be involved in any of these conversations or do any shopping in that corner of the NFL world with quarterbacks. But I think back to 2014, 2015, when O'Brien first got here and you wind up with Fitzpatrick and Hoyer. 2016, the disastrous Brock Osweiler signing. 2017, where you thought maybe they were honed in on Tony Romo and then Tony Romo decides to retire. Can you imagine going back to, say, 2015 when they brought in Brian Hoyer? And that was the guy, and it was going to be Hoyer and Mallett, and oh my God, and they still won 9 games and made the playoffs. But can you imagine in one of those off seasons having Tom Brady potentially available?
Right.
Having Phillip Rivers potentially available.
Hell, I'll say Jameis Winston.
I was just going to say Jameis Winston.
He'll put some numbers on the board at least.
These guys are
both
all
positive and negative.
Right, right. I mean, think about how we were. Think about Houston. Don't go into denial here. Many, many, many of us, the majority, were celebrating the signing of Brock Osweiler. Can you? And that was the big signing that offseason at quarterback. The number of quarterbacks hitting the market this year is astounding. If the Texans were still in the market, they would probably have a great chance at Tom Brady because of his relationship with Bill O'Brien.
That's the key phrase, though, is hitting the market. Because, okay, now as I'm getting excited about how maybe things will balance out a little bit in terms of supply and demand, let's go through this and think realistically how many of these guys are going to end up staying with the team they're already on.
Oh, good. I like this.
Drew Brees.
He already has said he's coming back.
No, he said he's coming back. He isn't officially.
He's
a free agent.
Yeah, good point. Good point. Yes, but he'll be in New Orleans.
Dak Prescott.
He'll be with the Cowboys.
He'll be with the Cowboys. Tom Brady.
I still think he'll be with the Patriots.
I think he'll be with the Patriots.
Yeah.
Phillip Rivers is going to be elsewhere.
He's definitely
gone. So that's
gone.
The first one on the list of all. You got a vial. But he is also old. I myself keep forgetting that he's really old and that his arm didn't look quite the same.
What quartile does he rank
he's
in terms of quarterbacks?
Yeah, and that's where it gets interesting because, okay.
Still in the upper half, right?
In terms of guys that are going to hit the market, especially. Yeah, he's still the upper half. So, Phillip Rivers. Then you get Ryan Tannehill. I think he stays in Tennessee.
I do, too.
Jameis Winston.
Depends on what happens with Rivers. If Rivers goes to Tampa, Jameis is clearly gone.
Depends on what happens with Rivers. I don't think... Boy, if you're Bruce Arians and you love the deep ball, what do you do with Tom Brady? Because there's got to be a part of Bruce Arians that would just love the chance to work with Tom Brady, especially if this is Arians' last go round as a coach.
Yeah,
that maybe I'm an old dog. I can learn new tricks, and Tom Brady can teach me some new tricks, and we don't have to be so in love with the deep ball here, and maybe we change things up a little bit.
Yeah,
and so maybe Tom Brady. But you're right; it's not such a slam dunk. So Jameis Winston might be on the market.
Yep.
Phillip Rivers. Marcus Mariota, Teddy Bridgewater. Okay, who do you want? Do you want Marcus Mariota or Teddy Bridgewater?
Bridgewater.
I want Bridgewater, too.
Bridgewater,
I feel like there's still an unknown about him. And I just trust him that he's an actual... Mentally, Bridgewater's an NFL quarterback.
Yeah.
I don't know if Marcus Mariota, mentally or accuracy-wise, is an NFL quarterback.
Accuracy-wise is what I was going to say. That's the big thing. I'm a big believer that whatever you come into the league with from an accuracy standpoint, you're going to stay pretty close to that.
So it's from guys that'll actually hit the market, like there's a really good chance that, let's say, Tom Brady, Jameis Winston, and Teddy Bridgewater hit the market. I feel like that
alone. When you say Brady, do you mean Rivers?
No, I meant, oh, no, I did I say?
You
I
said meant, Brady, Bridgewater, and...
Oh, and Rivers. I would say Brady, there's an actual chance.
Okay, gotcha.
So there alone, you've got four intriguing guys.
Yeah.
Which I feel is more than... Where's my telephone? This new phone's messing me up. There's alone. And then all of a sudden you get back into the normal free agency market. We're like, hey, how's Brett Hundley sound? What about Sean Mannion?
Yeah.
Hey, Chase Daniel. Hey. He's out there. Remember Chase Daniel in forever? Chase Daniel, how much money Chase Daniels made because he was an intriguing backup?
Because he threw like 10 passes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Could Case Keenum wind up starting for his... like fifth team in 5 years?
The Redskins?
Or I mean, Case Keenum's been essentially the opening week starter for the Vikings. He was a starter by week two.
Yeah.
The Broncos, he was the opening week starter. The Redskins, he was the opening week starter. Could he be the opening week starter for his fourth team in 5 years? And he was the opening week starter for the Rams back in 2015. Like, he's been the opening week starter for nearly, damn near a half dozen NFL teams.
Uh-oh, we got John McClain on the line.
We do?
Yeah. He says, no, we don't, actually. Just, John and Mike and I got into this huge argument once where now somebody on the text line is saying, Emmitt Smith didn't hold out. He did not have a contract. Look, if you're not showing up, you're holding out. Whether it's because you don't have a contract or you do have a contract, whatever.
Yeah.
You're locked out. Whatever. You're holding out. It's not a big deal.
Let me ask you a Dak Prescott question.
Yeah.
Because we just went through these teams. We went through the quarterbacks. We didn't go through the teams.
I will let the texter. I will agree with the texter in terms of, okay, it's different. If you don't have a contract, it's not as big a deal.
Yeah.
It's just that if you don't want to call it a holdout, fine.
So, Dak Prescott, let's pretend for a second, Seth, that the Cowboys, who are in all likelihood going to wind up giving him the franchise tag, there are two franchise tags you can give a player, the exclusive and the non-exclusive. The non-exclusive is less expensive, but it means other teams can negotiate with Dak Prescott, give him an offer sheet that the Cowboys would have to match. If the Cowboys choose not to match, they get two first-round picks. The exclusive means they pay him more, but he's theirs. Now, most teams, I think, go with the exclusive, but let's pretend for a second they go with the non-exclusive franchise tag for Dak Prescott. Would you give up two first-round picks in a near-premium quarterback contract for Dak Prescott?
No, because he hasn't been consistently a good NFL quarterback.
Let me attach a specific team to it.
Yeah.
The Indianapolis Colts have oodles of cap space and oodles of draft capital.
Yeah.
If you were the Indianapolis Colts, would you give up two? And your first-round picks are probably going to be at the back end of the first round.
No, I wouldn't. I'd just wait for a better opportunity to trade or something. And I'm not
that good, right?
I'm not a crazy fan of trading two first-round picks for anybody, including Laremy Tunsil or Jalen Ramsey.
But this is a quarterback.
Right, and it's a quarterback, but he's had two bad years and two good years. But I like quarterbacks that are good every year, like consistently at least good. And your down years, at least you're an average quarterback. And that's not what he's been, so I just don't trust him as somebody that I want. I trust that Laremy Tunsil at least is going to be good for the next 5 years that he's healthy. I don't trust that Dak Prescott will be.
I wonder if the Cowboys would go fishing like that. You know what I mean? Put the non-exclusive on him just to see if somebody would sign an offer sheet.
Yeah.
And then maybe the Cowboys go with a different solution at quarterback. Like you said, the supply of quarterbacks in the market right now favors the teams, not the quarterbacks. I think there's only a few teams that would even think about giving up a couple of firsts and signing Dak Prescott. I do think the Colts might think about it. The Chargers and the Patriots, if they let Brady go, would be the other two.
People are pointing out Cam Newton, too, if he ends up getting released.
Yeah.
I definitely don't think
Cam's going back to Carolina.
There's so few. This is where Cam might get. Cam's not going to really have a lot of choices necessarily, because I think if any of those other names that we read off compared to Cam, is those guys don't have nearly the same health issues Cam Newton does. And I'd just be really nervous about bringing Cam in unless he's there to tutor a young guy. And if Cam's okay with a 1 year deal where I've got a draft pick sitting behind him, I don't know. Does Cam seem like he'd be okay with that?
No.
Yeah.
No. He does not, just from an ego standpoint, doesn't strike me as a guy who's ready to. And he's not at an age where you would normally ask somebody to do that either. He's only 30. We forget about that. We're launching the Sports Radio 610 Best Bugs Tour presented by Coors Light. 7 crawfish joints over the next 7 weeks. That's what we're going to highlight. Give us some feedback as to where we should go. We do not have the agenda etched in stone yet. Hashtag Best Bugs. Tell us on social media where we should go. And it's kicking off. We do have the first place set up. It's in four. It's coming up on Fat Tuesday, so that's 4 days from now. Buffalo Run in spring, food specials, $6.10 per pound, includes crawfish, corn, potatoes, mushrooms, sausage, just $6.10 per pound. We've got great drink specials, Miller Lite pints, $1.50, Coors Light bottles, $2.50, giveaways every hour, including footballs autographed by the Texans. 10 to 6 will be at Buffalo Run in spring. So In the Loop and Clint Sterner broadcasting live. That's this coming Tuesday. Buffalo Run in spring, the 610 Best Bugs Tour presented by Coors Light. More details at sportsradio610.com/bestbugs. Will this new CBA get approved? What parts of this CBA make the most sense if you were a player? Which parts would make the least sense? We'll run through it next. I get an email every day from MLB.com kind of giving me their top 5 or 6 articles for the day. It's very helpful in the vocation that you and I are in, Seth. One of the articles they have is ranking every fantasy player 1 through 800 in MLB. And I'm not going to go through this, obviously. Let's go through them. 1 through 800.
Just do it.
Christian Yelich, number one.
Let's guess.
Ronald Acuna, number two. Yeah. Mike Trout. Mike Trout, number three, behind two other guys.
Mike Trout. Hmm.
Probably because his position. Well, those guys are outfielders. Anyways, no, I don't want to go down this road.
Mike Trout's face is puffier than you would expect. I'm just throwing that out there.
Must be on steroids.
I'm just throwing that out there. Yeah. For somebody who's incredibly lean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It does, but this article made me wonder. I wonder if fantasy nerds, of which I am not one in the baseball realm, it's just too much. I can't do fantasy baseball is an everyday thing. I can't do that. Fantasy football's perfect. It's just on the weekends. It's 16 games, whatever.
What about fantasy basketball?
That's closer to baseball for me. Too much to manage.
No, it's a lot to manage, and it actually seems it's not as much. It's harder to glean as much from a box score in basketball, so I feel like that would be even more labor intensive.
Yeah, but it did get me thinking. I wonder if the fantasy nerds are going to downgrade any of the Astros this year. It would be silly to do that because they didn't cheat in 2019, right? But I wonder if they. I wonder if either because they feel like the stats may have been inflated because they don't trust that they weren't cheating these last 3 years, or B. Sometimes you don't draft guys because you don't feel like wanting to root for them. I'm not drafting Alex Bregman. It means I got to root for Alex Bregman.
Right. And I do wonder, and this is the biggest thing I wonder about with whether this team might be affected by all this. It's not that I worry about the loss of their ability to cheat like they did back in 2017. It's that the constant stress, you know, we had Adam Spillane, who's in the clubhouse every day down there in West Palm Beach, say that you could tell that some guys are getting a little bit agitated about all of this. Somebody pulled a Mitch Trubisky and turned off a MLB Network in the locker room.
They got tired of having it hammered home on television all day long.
Which I get. Yeah. And this would even, remember when Mitchell Trubisky took a lot of heat last year for saying he wanted to turn the TVs off because they were talking so bad about the Bears. It's not like that was the main topic of discussion every single day.
Right.
It came up a lot about what happened to Mitch Trubisky, what's wrong with the Bears. But it wasn't like it is now with baseball where, man, this is everything.
The TV was the text page. I'm turning off the text page. I'm turning off the TV.
It's like when you go on a social media diet and you're just like, all right, no more Twitter for me.
Exactly. So yesterday the owners approved the new CBA. And I'll give the owners credit. They positioned it in a way that at least on social media and within the media cycle on television – that I would imagine, Seth, that there are probably a lot of football fans walking around today thinking that, hey, the new CBA's been approved. Well, no, it's only been approved by the ownership side. It has not been approved by the player side. And the owners, not only did they all approve the new CBA, very, very quickly, by the way, they all flew to New York and immediately approved it, but they've done a pretty good job, too, of publicizing what all it entails, what the time frame needs to be, and really putting the onus on the players now, who reportedly have a conference call scheduled today to possibly vote on.
Yeah, I will say I don't think that either side has necessarily been posturing the way it's been in the past. And it's not that traditional thing where sometimes management or ownership will try to frame it like the players are selfish if they don't sign it. I don't get that sense. You know, in baseball, that happens sometimes. The owner will leak whatever the first offer was, and immediately people would say, oh my gosh, I can't believe you turned down $200 million.
Right.
Like, no, they turned down the first offer.
Right.
It's what you do if you're not a moron.
Right.
So I don't think that the NFL owners are trying to do that here. I think NFL ownership has been very, very eager to get this deal done since before last season. Remember, there were reports that Goodell supposedly was trying to get the CBA done before the 2019 season, which would have been absurd. That's 2 years early. And I think the owners are anticipating a huge influx of cash if they can have labor peace. They want to get all of this tidied up so they can start talking to the networks and get as big a deal as possible. The networks don't really want to sign huge TV contracts if there's labor unrest.
That's right.
So you kind of get everything on board, get this rolling along as fast as possible. So it makes sense that they want to get it done urgently. I think the NFL players, and I would credit both sides, players and ownership, they've been very proactive about meeting, getting ahead of this, trying to get on the right page. The various points of contention, a lot of them that were points of contention with the last CBA don't seem to be a big deal right now. Player safety, I think we've all kind of started to come to an agreement about what they should and should not do. The biggest issue and the thing that adds the most confusion, I think, is adding a 17th game and potentially more playoff games and however that might affect player salaries and whatnot. And then simply the share the player share of the revenue. In basketball and in baseball, players get about 50% of the revenue. Yep. With this offer, the players are going to get 48% of the revenue in the NFL. I don't think that, look, they're not going to all of a sudden in one giant leap get up to 50% with this CBA. I think that this could be working towards that. Mm-hmm. And there's an avenue by which they can increase it a little bit more with this CBA. So I think the players turn this down, but I think they're relatively close.
They're on track. Yeah. Just because they turn it down doesn't mean that there's going to be a work stoppage after the 2020 season. I would say here are the things that you need to know without getting way, way too granular. If you want to get granular on this whole thing, then get on Twitter and go to, if you want to get like the nitty gritty details, the fact sheet, there's a fellow by the name of Darren Heitner, H-E-I-T-N-E-R, who's got the fact sheet. It's a 3-page thing of what the different facets of the agreement are for current players, for the owners, and for former players like Seth Payne. But here are the things I would say, the bullet points that you need to know about this, is that the owners have approved it. The players are set to have a conference call reportedly today where there could be a vote on it. 2/3 of the player reps. This conference call will be among the 32 player reps, and I would assume Demora Smith, who is runs the NFLPA. They need 2/3 of the player reps to vote on it, to approve it at that level. It would then go to a vote of all of the players, in which all you need is a simple majority. You just need one more player to like it. Then don't like the CBA, and there will be a new CBA in place.
If the player, I'll tell you the way things generally work. If the player reps approve it, the team's going to approve it.
Right.
Most of the guys sitting in the meeting room are like, oh, tell me how to vote. Please, just, all right, good, fine.
Let's go. So the other bullet points you need to know, this is the CBA that includes a 17-game season. It would start no sooner than 2021, which makes sense because all the opponents for 2020 are already etched in stone. The schedule's not etched in stone, but the opponents are. The 14-game playoff, or the 14-team playoff, 7 per conference, it's 6 right now, that would begin as soon as 2020. So if they approve this thing in the next day, several days before this season, we could have a postseason in which we've got an extra wildcard team coming up in 2020. From just an overall global standpoint in terms of player benefits, higher percentage of league revenue going to players, as Seth just alluded to, improvements in the drug policy and discipline policy, which is, I think, code for easier to smoke weed.
They're going
to
decriminalize. They're not allowing it, but they're going to kind of decriminalize it.
Right. Higher minimum salaries, higher per team spending floors, a relaxed off-season agenda with the work rules and OTAs, mini camps, training camp, and so forth. The other thing you need to know about this proposed CBA that's been approved by the owners but not approved by the players is that J.J. Watt does not like it.
Yeah.
A simple 6-word tweet at 7:21 p.m. last night. J.J. Watt, hard no on that proposed CBA.
Without knowing exactly how much J.J. has talked to Brennan Scarlett or any of the other NFLPA guys on the team, I don't know if that's the right tact. I don't know if it's right for I don't know exactly what's going on there, but as far as individuals, players coming out and making public declarations, like when I was a player and I was never a rep, I tried as much as possible to just defer to the player rep. It's a representative democracy, you know? And those guys are in the meeting rooms. Those guys are in the negotiations. Those guys know exactly the ins and outs. And there's a time when it comes for the players to vote. But it's interesting. I would say that I would imagine when JJ was reading that, is he's looking at it, he's got to look at that 17th extra game. And the way it's being handled right now is that he'd get paid extra, but it would be not as much as his normal paycheck.
Yeah, just real quick on that, these players who are under contract, 16-game contracts right now, who are still under contract, who would still be under contract in a 17-game season, they would get a 17th game check, which would be the equivalent of a regular game check, up to $250,000.
Yeah.
So J.J. Watt makes about $1 million a game. And unless J.J. Watt is going to tweet why he doesn't like this CBA, if all he's going to do is tweet hard no to the CBA, then he leaves it open to speculation as to why he doesn't like it. And I'll say this in his defense, that would be a very logical reason for J.J. Watt to not like it. They're asking you to do what you normally get paid $1 million to do. They're asking you to take a $750,000 pay cut for a week.
Now,
and I get that.
This is where it gets interesting, too. And this is where it might actually benefit J.J. Watt to sign it earlier than later. It could benefit a lot of players, whether they're free agents or not, because this tweet from Adam Schefter, there are now multiple NFL teams waiting to make roster moves based on the potential of a new CBA. Mm-hmm. If a new CBA is approved in the days to come, a flurry of roster moves will follow. Without getting too much into it, one thing that happens if you extend the CBA is that now you can sign bigger deals because you can extend them off into the future. You can backload contracts. You can do a lot of stuff that you might not necessarily be able to do right now, which could mean a flurry of money for the players. Yep. Owners will then also project out and think, based on whatever their own cap guys go, for the Texans, that cap guy is, I guess, Bill O'Brien, are like,
with
okay,
a green
hey,
visor and a calculator. Yeah,
look,
yeah.
We can spend more.
Yeah.
If there's one rule in economics, it's that certainty is good.
Yeah.
Well, unless you're a hedge fund trader or something. But certainty and being able to plan forward
sure.
tends to mean people are more willing to spend money right now. Owners are going to be more willing to spend spend liberally right now if they have certainty on it in the future.
Let me ask you something. As a former player, how closely do you pay attention to this stuff? Because there is stuff that affects former players in here.
Oh, I had seen one tweet from somebody that said that there was going to be a lot of extra money for retired players.
Well, here, I've got the bullet point.
Well, what is it? Wait, I'm going to make my decision right now. It's all about numero uno, baby.
Okay, retroactive increase.
Whoa.
To $550 per month for all pre-2012 vested players.
Oh, okay. That would actually... So, $550 per month per credited season?
I guess
okay,
so.
Okay, so this
it
is the way
it
works.
It just says $550 per month.
Okay.
That's all it says on that bullet point.
$550 per month.
It doesn't seem like a lot of money. In terms of a pension.
I'll tell you, I'll be very open about this. Let me do this. I'm going to open up my NFL player benefits login right now.
This is a peek behind the curtain.
I played for 10 years, and... because I played for 10 years, look at this. They got this authentication now, so I have to type in my authentication code. They've gotten very technical. I try to get them to vote this out in the new CBA. Like nobody's trying to tap into my 401k. Come on, I'll tell you another thing. The NFL. All right, so
you're doing six things.
So I'm doing this
right
one
now.
Piece authentication right. or whatever, yeah. one factor authentication. Yeah. So. My pension, at the age 55, if I chose to accept it, I would make $4,595 a month.
Ooh.
So, remember, that's 10 years from now, so you factor in inflation and whatnot, but it's still a pretty good chunk, you know?
Yeah.
I'll make like $57,000, $58,000 a year,
especially if you're still working.
Exactly. Now, if I wait until I'm 65, you up the ante quite a bit there. I think I can get up to like $12,000 a month if I wait
So it's basically gambling is what it is.
What's that?
You're betting on existing for 10 more years.
Well, that's what all kind of pensions and life insurance are.
I say it non-disparagingly. It's a different form of gambling.
So, but the way they work that out, they give you a certain credit per season, and it kind of changes over time.
Yeah.
So I have no idea what that $500 per month, if they just added on to my current pension or what.
You should find out.
I'm going to have to, What's it say exactly?
It's a lot more
says?
Wine, huh?
What's it say exactly?
This is exactly what the bullet point says. It says, former players, retroactive increase to $550 per month for all pre-2012 vested players.
Okay, so that tells me nothing.
I don't think it's
specific
enough.
This doesn't make any sense
enough.
At all. Yeah, it doesn't tell me
they're
whether
just
it's...
trying to snow you over. You're probably like, oh, that sounds good. These are the other bullet points, Seth. Expand pension eligibility to all former players with 3 credited seasons.
Okay.
That doesn't affect you.
Okay, that does make sense to me now. So this is for everybody. This is how it factors out for Seth. So $550 per month, that's per season that I played.
Okay.
Which would mean that would be instead of $4,500 a month, I'd be getting $5,500 a month. So that's an extra, actually $4,600 a month to $5,500. So making an extra 10 grand a year
it.
Or so.
I get
yeah.
it. 550 times 10.
All right. The CBA. I'm going to hold out for an extra 11 grand
what
a year.
What are you going to do with your extra grand per month?
An extra grand per month?
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess, is that enough to have a second family? Can I do that? I don't think so.
It depends on how close they are. How comfortable are they living below the poverty line?
I don't want that. I think that I'll probably my daughter's education or some stupid crap
That's
like
so
that.
So lame.
Yeah, she should be done by then, right?
Maybe you can finally hire an assistant.
No, or I'm gonna hire to
air dry your armpits.
I'm not gonna do an assistant. I'm gonna do an adult nanny. I'm gonna hire somebody to take care of me and do the very basic things.
$1,000 a month,
kind of like not a housekeeper or anything, but like somebody to kind of pick out clothes for me and maybe cook for me. That's or whatever, funny. Like a butler, but more matronly as well.
Yeah.
Hug me when I'm sad,
right?
Like those kinds of things.
Right, right. Not just menial tasks around the house, but almost like a support dog.
Yeah. Are any of our listeners willing to do that for $1,000 a month?
The answer is going to be yes. The answer is going to be yes. There's enough people that like you that listen to this show where you'll have a flood of resumes coming in.
It's a 24-hour a day job.
Okay. Well, maybe
you
not.
Do get room and board. You do have to cook the board, but other than that, it's not bad.
All right. Let's do some headlines, Jonesy.
Houston with the small ball lineup. And the lob up for Westbrook, set up by the Beard.
Yeah, that was nice. James Harden to Russell Westbrook. This was a game last night. The Rockets beat the Warriors 135-105 in a game that was literally never close. It was at its closest at 0-0, and then it got really bad for the Warriors. The Rockets jump out to a gigantic lead after one quarter. They cruise the ship into the port, and they win by 30 in Golden State against the Warriors. Next game coming up this Saturday. Big game coming up this Saturday against Utah. I guess the big story from this game last night, Russell Westbrook picked up a couple more technical fouls, which means he was ejected from the game. Here is, for a little chippy little elbow after a made basket against one of the Warriors, here's Russell Westbrook on his second ejection of the year.
I got to do a better job of holding myself accountable to a very, very high standard. And I'll make sure I leave no room for error to allow somebody and people to paint me out to be a guy that I'm not. I just think it's unfair though, that after all that, I'm the only one that get a tech or kicked out. That's not fair. I don't care what nobody says. There's so many other people involved in it that were doing so many things that weren't okay. But I'm the one that gets the tech, gets ejected, and then everybody else is cool and go back to play. But like I said, I take responsibility for that, and I hold myself to a very high standard, which I'm going to withhold.
Okay.
He tried to reel it back in there at the end.
He holds himself accountable and yet's blaming the league for singling him out with these technical fouls.
He could be making the argument that he thought everybody should have gotten thrown out.
Right. Ended the game.
Klay Thompson.
Yeah.
And whichever scrub was sitting in the second row that was talking to Russell Westbrook. That's why Russell got really PO'd, was that backup that was sitting back there yapping his mouth.
That would bother me too. Now, Russ has 13 technicals on the season now.
Yeah.
At his 16th technical, he gets suspended for the next game. We know that they're load managing Russ on back-to-backs. The Rockets' next back-to-back is March 7th and 8th, a Saturday and Sunday, at Charlotte, home for Orlando, if you care. That's seven games from now. So Russ needs to basically find his way into three more technical fouls and make sure he gets the 16th one either on the 5th of March or the 7th of March so that he sits out one of those two back-to-backs.
Well, that's simple enough.
Yeah.
If I were him, I would just whip it out.
He needs to load manage his technicals. Wait, what?
Right in front of an official. I'm like, here you go, big fella.
If you haven't gotten your 16th yet and it's before the back-to-back, I would do.
I wouldn't do that because that would actually probably end up in a suspension or something. So I would, but you know what? If
traumatize
you like,
some kids in the front row.
I would come up and kung fu chop an official. Not enough to hurt him, like doing it playfully, but to where they'd have to, you know, go by the letter of the law and say, hey, you made contact with an official.
Right, right. Yeah. That might be more than a one-game suspension.
What about shove an obnoxious fan?
That might be the malice in the palace.
Nudge?
Yeah.
Nudge an obnoxious
say
fan?
Say mean things, too.
Remember Beverly got that guy suspended for a year, fan, who was the son of one of the minority owners?
Yep. Yeah. Yep, that was good.
I hated that guy.
Kyrie Irving is going to have surgery on his right shoulder, and he's going to miss the remainder of the season. So the Brooklyn Nets, if you're keeping track, are spending two max contracts this season on two guys who are going to wind up playing virtually zero games for them. There was some rumor, some smoke about Kevin Durant maybe coming back before the end of the year.
Yeah.
Obviously not happening now if Kyrie Irving's not there.
Even so, I'm saying, I was watching a video of him shooting yesterday, and he looked good, but David Chow, the pro football doc there, he pointed out some weaknesses in his and he had a little bit of hitchiness in some of his movement, which isn't a big deal at this stage of the rehab, but I don't think that would be wise.
Kyrie Irving's surgery on his right shoulder. I'm anxious to see next year how this works out with Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. just because Kyrie Irving doesn't seem to play well with others.
Plus, Kyrie Irving will have his attention divided because he's going to be the Players Association president.
He was voted the VP of the Players Association.
So he will be hard at work trying to get the NBA to acknowledge that the Earth is flat.
That's right. That's Kendrick Perkins called it the blind leading the blind.
A flat earther is now the head of the Players Association in the NBA.
I find Kyrie Irving to be one of the more annoying athletes out there. In part because, yes, the flat earth stuff. Kyrie Irving has also never been positively affecting first of all, he's been on a lot of bad teams. He's never really positively affected a good team other than when he had LeBron James as a teammate.
It was all he could do to get the hell out of the best situation in basketball.
That he's ever been in, to get off of the NBA
champion. Kyrie Irving's a man who flies on airplanes several times a week, high enough to see the curvature of the earth, and maintains that the earth is flat.
Indeed. Yep. XFL ratings in week two. I don't think this is unexpected. They dropped in week two. XFL ratings did. This was the story of the first XFL. If you remember back in 2000, 2001, whenever it was, monster ratings the first week, and then they went down off a cliff after that because that product was bad. The XFL, the second iteration of it, the ratings dropped expectedly in week two, but they were still pretty decent.
They were decent ratings, and some of that was accounted for by the fact that you were going from... In some of the slots, you went from network to cable, and then in the other slots, you went from cable to the network. So it's not as simple as just looking at the total overall numbers.
The biggest drop is the FS1 Sunday night game, but it's notable that last week's Sunday night game was on ESPN, as Seth just said. So you're sort of jockeying these time slots. I don't know if they do those things to sort of jigger the numbers the way they want to have them or whatever. The bottom line is I think the XFL, even 2 weeks in, probably feels pretty good about where they're at right
now. You had over 2 million viewers on 3 of the 4 games. The FS1 game, so ABC, Fox, and ABC all had over 2 million viewers for those 3 games. The St. Louis-Houston game was the lowest rated one, but that was on FS1, and it was still 1.36 million viewers.
Sunday night, too.
And I think if you think about some of the programming, and this is what people keep driving the point home, think about the programming you see this time of year on the weekends for sports, and there's a whole lot of stuff that might get 50,000 to 100,000 viewers.
Right.
So if you can get over a million viewers, it's worth the network's while, depending on what the TV deal is to show these things.
Yep. All right, so the XFL, we'll see how it does in week 3. Ticket demand reportedly is still pretty high for the XFL. Seth, there are 5 NFL teams that are eligible to be asked to do Hard Knocks that cannot say no if they're asked. If you haven't made the playoffs the last 2 years, if you've never been on Hard Knocks, if you don't have a new head coach, all those 3 things are criteria that if you check all those boxes, the league can ask you to do Hard Knocks and you cannot refuse. There are 5 teams that fit that category this year, and I don't have the list in front of me, but the Pittsburgh Steelers are one of those 5 teams.
Oh, yeah. Do it.
They never find themselves on this list, right?
Because they'd be forced to do it.
Yeah, the Steelers are at the top of the list that the NFL would like to do this with. They are the heavy Vegas favorite for a reason. They're blue blood royalty. They've had a lot of drama surrounding them the last couple of years.
Mason Rudolph, you'll be able to follow him around and catch how many racial slurs he drops.
That's right, that's right.
What if Hard Knocks goes in there and it turns out that Mason Rudolph has a potty mouth? And you're like, by the second episode, you're kind of like, oh, wow, I think maybe he could have said it.
Garrett, like, what the hell? Miles Garrett has a point.
Yeah.
But the Steelers are the chalk right now to be asked to do Hard Knocks. The other teams are teams like Detroit, and I want to say the Giants, the Broncos,
mm-hmm.
and the Jaguars are the other teams.
Jaguars.
Oh, and the Cardinals. Okay, who did I say then? The Giants, I guess, might not be on there. Okay, gotcha.
I wonder,
new head coach with the Giants.
The marquee players are rarely the guys that end up being the stars of Hard Knocks. Yeah. I don't think Roethlisberger would probably be all that interesting.
No. We'd get to see T.J. Watt.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I wonder if we'd get a workout montage with T.J. Watt.
Are you kidding me?
And then,
per show.
And then watch the hate pour in, just like when J.J. J.J. working out?
Ooh,
it's obvious that he was working out just for the cameras. You could tell because there were cameras there.
Yep. So there is a rumor that there might be a movie made about the Astros cheating scandal. We know there's going to be a documentary made by, who did we have on the other day? Ben Ryder. Ben Ryder, who wrote Astro Ball. But Billy Corbin could have
from Smashing Pumpkins?
Is it the same Billy? No, I don't think it's the same Billy Corbin from Smashing Pumpkins.
Okay.
but let's double check that. Who was the man behind Screwball, which was a huge success, used child actors to tell the unbelievable story about Alex Rodriguez and MLB's biogenesis scandal. He is looking at, according to TMZ, taking on the Houston Astros scandal and the whole sign stealing thing. Billy Corbin saying it's writing itself as we speak right now, and central to that story, as he was to the biogenesis scandal and the whole A-Rod mess, is Rob Manfred, Commissioner of Baseball.
So this is going to be, like anything ever is, rife with inaccuracies. And the problem with any kind of biopic, a Hollywood biopic, is that they take artistic license with stuff, but then more people watch the movie than actually read the articles and everything. And in their minds, that becomes the actual story.
Yeah.
Same thing with JFK, the movie. You know, Oliver Stone said, look, you know, some of this is fictionalized, but you go watch and it's impossible not to have it happen. You watch the movie and you're like, oh, yeah, that's exactly how it happens. Right. I remember. I synced it in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Same thing with Rudy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, Rudy.
They took some liberty. Not quite as historical as JFK.
Who's
obviously
the biggest star of this scandal? I guess I would see like Ben Affleck playing Justin Verlander.
Oh, that's a good one.
Maybe Matt Damon playing Bregman, but he's too old. They'd have to digitalize his face.
Yeah, yeah. I guess Danny DeVito's too old to play Jose Altuve.
I feel like there's a spot for Bieber in this vehicle.
Kyle Tucker.
Who did you say for Altuve?
Danny DeVito. Hey, I'm really sorry about what we did, huh? I'm sorry that we stole some signs, and I won the MVP and stole it from Judge, huh?
Say, do it's good, HEB commercial, it's good, in a Danny DeVito L2A.
Hey, it's good, you jackass. It's ready.
Who's the most notable short Hollywood actor right now that could play play Jose Altuve?
They're all old. Joe Pesci.
Most of them are pretty small. I know.
We only know. Let me tell you something. Hey, my man stole some signs there. Yeah, hey, Bregman, you might crack under pressure, huh? You might fold under testimony.
I'm going to tell you, that awful, awful movie, The Irishman, is going to start this trend
of
taking
CGI
old actors and CGIing them into younger people. Everybody listen. If you have seen The Irishman, and you're going to sit here and tell me that any movie where they try to make Robert De Niro curb stomp somebody like he's 25 years old, and you didn't laugh out loud in that scene, you're a fraud. There's no way in hell you could. All these people thought The Irishman was this great movie. All I'm doing is watching around and saying, like, I'm watching a 78-year-old man pretend to be a 25-year-old man.
Right.
I might as well be in South Beach. This is not an actual movie.
That's right.
This is depressing old guy in a nightclub trying to hit on the 19-year-olds. This is weird. And, of course, it's not the same Billy Corbin from Smashing Pumpkins, because that's actually Billy Corgan. As far as I know, there is no Billy Corbin in Smashing Pumpkins.
There we go. Okay. Then he gets confused for him.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.